Episode 1211, Marian Titles.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
I am Ben DiBono. We're back.
We're back. We're going to learn something today, everybody.
I hope we do. I hope we all do. It was an interesting week in Catholic news this last week. And I wanted to cover this. We had a listener reach out and ask us to cover it.
John. Hello, John. Thank you.
Hello, John.
So Ben was already planning this conversation. Had sent me a link to review, and then John followed up with a question about this. So here we are.
Yes. Yeah, so the reason I wanted to cover it is that I think it's an interesting use case of understanding, or rather misunderstanding, what a proclamation like this is. So if you're completely in the dark, it's also a good, and if we properly understand it, it should tell us a lot more about the Catholic theology of Mary. It should tell us a lot more about how the Catholic authority of the magisterium works, how Catholic tradition works, all of that. In other words, there's maybe some misconceptions that are bigger than just this news that we can clear up along the way. And indeed, I've seen several of them. So what happened? Well, what happened was the Vatican issued a document. The document was not issued in the name of Pope Leo, but was approved by him. It was done by the Dicastery of the Doctrine of the Faith. and it was the result of a long study, as these things tend to go, into the use of specific titles for Mary. Specifically, buckle your seatbelts, Protestants. This one's going to be bumpy. Co-redemptrix and mediatrix of all graces. And so the document came out and said, let's not use those. Now, it said a little bit more nuance than that. We'll get into it. So as you can imagine, the Protestant reaction was interesting, to say the least.
Like, when did you think the Protestants would be for that decision?
Oh, they very much were.
Okay, so what do you mean interesting then?
Well, what I mean is that the reactions I saw from Protestants failed to understand what was and was not being said. And if you're here at the Sci-Fi Christian, you're about to learn what was actually and not actually said, and then I will give you my opinions on it. Because I'm allowed to, as a Catholic, have opinions. But wait a second. Don't you just have to agree with this wholeheartedly? No. That's part of the fun. We'll get into all that as we go. But one of the things I saw very common among Protestants is the assumption that this was a change on what the church teaches about Mary. In other words, this is a change to Marian dogma, or at least Marian doctrine. It is not. It is very explicitly not. Okay. I also saw Protestants that had the reaction of saying, well, that's a good start. Which, do you realize how condescending you sound? Hopefully it's not our listeners who are making those types of statements, but that is tremendously condescending, as if to say, well, Catholics, nice first step. Let's try a little harder to stop worshiping Mary, and then maybe we'll stop calling you idolaters eventually. Okay? So that's really annoying. And then there's parts of the Protestant reaction that are acting as though everything the Pope says, even though the Pope wasn't even the one who said this, he approved it, but he didn't say it, is infallible. Now, all of Catholic doctrine is called into question and changed. So you lose on both ends. As a Catholic here, you lose on the one end because it's like, well, you worship Mary and now you worship Mary a little bit less. And so that makes me happy. But at the same time, this is just evidence that Catholics can change the rules and change the belief anytime they want. And so it's just a make it up as you go along, because it's all about man's word, not God's word. And that's what Catholics are. They follow man-made traditions, and then you're off to the races on that. So you can't win here. You can't win on any of that. And so I'm here to help clear this up for you and help you understand what was actually said and why it matters, okay? So let's start with the basics. What changed about the Catholic teaching around Mary after this document?
I bet nothing.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And this is a really important point to put out, especially for those Protestants. And maybe a few of you out in the audience had these bad thoughts in your head of saying something like, good first step, let's see what you do next. Not only did Catholic teaching on Mary change, it will never change.
No, not only did it not change.
Yeah. It will never change, and it can never change. Okay? I know that's a hard blow for the Protestants out there to hear. It will never change. Period. Our understanding of some aspects of it might change and develop over time, but Marian dogma did not, is not going to, and will never change. Period. Full stop. End of discussion. So this is not a good start. You may like that we're not going to use those terms. We'll talk about the terms themselves in a second. But nothing changed. And so you say, well, wait a second, that's confusing. And this is where I'll start to get on board, you know, with helping the Protestants understand a little bit. Because it is confusing. It's like, well, wait a second. If you were allowed to call Mary the co-redemptrix, that sure sounds like you were saying she's like Jesus's little helper. Right. Like Jesus saves us with Mary is what that sounds like to me. And here we get into the crux of what the document is actually saying. So what the document is saying, and I'll give my commentary on it in just a bit, is that, and because I have both pro and positive and negative thoughts on this document. What this document actually says when you get into it is that the title co-redemptrix, when properly understood within Catholic thought and teaching, has no theological issues with it. None. In other words, that title, despite how it initially sounds, especially when you hear it from Protestant ears, and I have enough Protestant history where I can still listen to it with those ears and be like, ooh, that's a dicey one. Doesn't mean Mary is like Jesus's little helper or that she is the co-redeemer in the sense of saving us alongside Jesus. What does this, just same as the mediatrix of all graces, doesn't fly in the face of the verse that says there is one mediator between man and God, Jesus. What both those titles and other Marian titles that weren't addressed mean is that Mary plays a unique role in our salvation. She cooperated with God in the work of redemption in a unique way. That is what is meant in a very basic way by the reference to her as co-redemptrix. And I'd be willing to bet that most of the Protestants out there, though I know you're never in a million years going to get on board with that term, and I'm not asking you to, would agree with that concept. Mary played a unique role in the history of salvation. That's just a fact of Christian teaching. Of any type of Orthodox Christian teaching. And the use of the title co-redemptrix is intended to draw attention to that fact. That's it. That's the big scandal. So why the document? Well, the document is that the title is, the statement of the document boils down to that those titles are too easily misunderstood.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I if you were to tell me before we just had this conversation, co-redemptrix, but don't worry, it doesn't mean what it sounds like. I'd be able to put the pieces together
Bingo.
By myself to know what that means. But I can also understand somebody thinking, holy buckets, that's what they think?
Yeah.
So it is confusing, but with context, you
not,
can put
not
it,
everybody has a Ben DiBono in
yeah,
their life.
Well,
to
with
help
context,
them.
You can put it together.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. That's exactly it. That is the crux of the document, is saying that this title is needlessly confusing. Let's not use it, because even though we can put the pieces together to get there, it takes ultimately too much work to get there in order for it to be. It is needlessly confusing. Okay. That's the crux of the document.
Yeah.
Okay? So when you look at it from that angle, what changed? Nothing. Basically, the document, the TLDR on the document is, let's stop upsetting the Protestants so much by using confusing language. That's what it boils down to, okay? So all this goes back to like the Protestant reactions of, well, that's a good start. No, basically this document exists because you guys are just getting in a tizzy anytime we talk about Mary. Like, that's what it boils down to. Okay. Now, the other part of this, and I'll give my opinion here.
Wait, before you go on to the other part, I'll just say I've been following Catholicism actively, especially as your friend. I've never even heard those terms used.
Yeah.
So, to me, I guess it's like, okay, I guess it's good that they're thinking about it, but it's not like a lot of Protestants are hearing those terms, I'm imagining.
I love both of your comments so far, because when we get into my pros and cons of this statement, everything you've said is going to hit on both sides.
Okay.
So the other part of this is that Catholic doctrine just changed. They can change at any time. Well, no, they didn't. So what does this document do and what does it not do? Well, this document sets up boundaries that the faithful should follow, and priests and other Catholic theologians and writers should follow. But it's not binding.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't dogma.
Yeah.
You can disagree with this document and be a good Catholic. And I think that's something that gets confusing, is that the idea that every statement out of the Vatican, we treat it in the same way that we treat laws in this country. Like, well, that's the law now. That law just passed, and I don't like it, but I have to live by it. No. Like, that's these statements aren't laws. You can't think of the Pope as the president and all these little, you know, dicasteries issuing documents as Congress or the Senate. No, Catholicism doesn't work that way, okay? Yes, the Pope can speak infallibly. It's happened, like, two times in a couple hundred years. You know, the idea that the Pope, everything he says is infallible, so they're changing their mind left and right. No, I mean, you can be a great Catholic and think Pope Leo or Pope Francis or Pope Benedict or any other pope is a terrible pope, and there are certain popes we're all on board with were terrible popes. Like, go back to the Middle Ages, we had some really bad popes, really, really bad ones. So the idea that Catholic authority is so badly misunderstood doesn't help either when these things come up. So this is a document Catholics should pay attention to, and it is in no way, shape, or form dogmatically binding. Okay? So what's my take on it? Let me give you my pro. I like it because ... and I don't like it because ... Okay, the like it, I like it for exactly what you said. I was a Protestant, and I'm sympathetic to needless hurdles for Protestants crossing the Tiber. Meaning that I don't care a ton about, you know, catering to the angry Protestant trolls on X, but I do care about the Protestant who's considering RCIA or OCIA.
Or OCIA.
OCIA, as it's called now. I do care about that. And I do care about that person who's maybe on the fence, they're in a delicate place. Conversion's a delicate thing, and something that is needlessly confusing can knock them off course. Okay? So I'm very sympathetic to it from that perspective. I can appreciate that even years after my conversion, I would hear terms like this, know intellectually how to put the pieces together, and still have that visceral reaction.
Hmm, okay.
So I'm sympathetic to it from that perspective. Okay? So that's why this doesn't bother me that much, and I'm in favor for it from that perspective. I think that it's good to remove those barriers, and where you're being needlessly confusing, stop it. Okay. The other side, though, is also true, because what you said is true. You've been following Catholicism as closely as a non-converting Protestant would be.
Yeah.
You never heard this.
Never heard the terms. In fact, I was just thinking the opposite. I think this is actually a bad thing, because this speaks to people who follow Catholicism. Like that.
Yeah.
So this terminology is for them. It's not for Protestants. Like, right? So why cater to people that don't understand?
Yes. And that's the other side of this. And I'm taking some of these points from a conversation I had with my friend Chris, who's sometimes a sci-fi Christian listener.
Hello,
so
Chris.
If you're listening, Chris, welcome. And he was pointing out that, like, you know, this is I'm paraphrasing what he was saying in our conversation, but this is kind of it's a solution that's solving a symptom, not the real problem.
You know how sometimes people try to give a solution to a problem that isn't actually a big problem.
Yeah.
I think this is that. This doesn't seem like a huge problem.
Right. And the real problem here is the failure of catechesis, the failure of being able to, to be able to teach and develop Catholics within our four walls and Catholic doctrine and be able to speak coherently and intelligently to our own people.
Yes.
So because we failed at catechesis, we look to clean up our language instead of explaining what it
means. I'm totally on this side. This speaks like
you wound up on the pro co-redemptric side.
Yes,
of the
because
conversation.
It's not for me. It's for your team.
Yeah.
Like it speaks to you and it leads you guys. It is a shorthand for something that's meaningful to you. So why change it for everybody else?
Yeah.
I kind of think it's weak. Like if a Protestant, nothing against your friends, but if there was Protestant terms that bugged other people, I'd be like, sorry, it's not. I mean, we would love it if you join us, but it's not necessarily for you to love. It just is what it is.
Yeah. And I can very much relate to that side as well. The other point Chris made when I was talking to him that I thought was a really good one is that this is a signal from Catholicism to try and appeal to Protestantism, especially Western American Protestantism. But the actual appeal should go to the Orthodox Church.
Oh.
You know, that's the aisle to reach across more than to, especially mainline Protestantism that is falling apart and may not even exist in a meaningful way in a generation.
Knock it off. I wasn't asked about your belief.
I'd say evangelicalism is in a different world, but like the mainline Lutheran, Methodist, I mean, Anglican churches are falling apart. I saw a story today about a German, and I'm going to put heavy air quotes on this, priest, not Catholic, Protestant, who conducted a wedding, nice thing for a priest to do, of four men.
All together?
All together. Just a big old clump.
Okay.
Of four dudes.
I didn't know you could do that.
Well, that's the state of German Protestantism. Now, German Catholicism is nothing to write home about either. But there you go.
Okay, so you're surprised about where I landed on this.
I am a little bit, but pleasantly so. So all that to say, I hope people learn something. I don't blame people for being confused. It does get confusing, but can we just knock it off with the idea that Catholics are going to wake up one day and say, you know what? Mary kind of sucks after all. No, like we're big on Mary and that's not going to change.
Is it? Here's a question for you. This is for both sides, Protestant, Catholics, whatever. Is it rude to say, like, we want you to come in and be a part of our family, but some of this is for insiders and we're not going to necessarily cater to you. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, 100, not only do I not think it's rude, I think the failure to do that is one of the biggest failings of Christianity in the last 50 years.
Okay, because I think that's where this conversation is leading me. It's to a place that isn't even really the main point, but what I'm left feeling is we want everybody to be Christian. But once you are in, there's some things that are for insiders, and like this terminology. So it does make me feel like I would, if I was them, I'd take it back. They can't, but it just feels like that was a waste. Yeah. Like, why not continue using terminology that's meaningful to insiders?
Yeah. I mean, it's on the evangelical world, like, that's the great indictment of the Willow Creek seeker friendly model, is that you took church. Let's just take Catholic Protestant theology out of it. Church is for Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And so you took church and you decided church isn't for Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Church is for people who might want to become Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big difference between saying we should make those people welcome and have a way of bringing them in and changing the fundamental structures and theology of how we do church to cater to those who are not Christians.
Yes, you're saying there's a line where, yes, we want to bring new people in, but at what point does it become not even for Christians anymore?
It goes even further than that. In the world of Protestantism, especially evangelicalism since the 90s when the Willow Creek movement took off, that is the single most destructive force. It's why...
Seeker-friendly churches? That's what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. 100%. Like, Protestant liberalism is its own disaster. Like, and that is awful and evil, and that's how you get a priest marrying four men. Okay? But a lot of Christians who aren't that are attending evangelical megachurches that are so innocuous, so timid, so cowardly that they're not doing any good. They might as well not exist. You know, it's like, these are the churches. Here's a great test for you. If your church that you go to has at any time in the recent history done an At the Movies sermon series, you need to find a new church. I'm not even kidding. I'm dead serious. If your church has or ever does do an At the Movies sermon series, find a new church. You go to a pretend church. I'm sorry. You might like it. They might have a great kids program. You go to a fake church. You need a new one.
I do like movies.
That's the problem. Just out of curiosity, because I sometimes get grouchy and then hop on Google, I decided to check and see, are pastors using the 6-7 meme in their sermons? And indeed, there are.
Of course, they are.
And so if your pastor incorporates trendy memes into its service, first of all, thank him, because that's how you kill the meme. Like, that'll be the death of that horrible thing. And then second, go find a new church, because you go to a fake church. I'm sorry, that's mean, but it's true.
I think that might be too far, but
go to a fake church.
We were together on a lot of things today. So listeners, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
Goodbye.
We're the Suffolkers, and signing off.